All right.
Usually we do a little, you know, a little rehash for a few minutes, but we're not doing it this time.
I'm in no mood for banter today.
Well, I want to get to the bottom of this bad mood. I don't want this energy leaking into the show. I've been excited about doing this show, and you seem grim. So let's get you out of this. Let's get some good Maddie energy going here.
I don't know. This might jibe well with what we're about to talk about. Talk to me. This
really
sour mood I'm in.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, it's. Well, this is Rated P for Paranormal, the show where we rate and review paranormal-themed film and television. I'm Maddie Blake. That's Tony Arkin in Brooklyn. And I'm in coastal Rhode Island, which, hey, look, I'm the one who chose to live here and be subject to coastal flooding. So I had my day all planned out, came home from my morning show this morning, ready to go, and water in the basement. Always $1,000 for something to finally fix the water problem in my basement. So I completed my home gym with rubber mats on the floor that I cut. It's all perfect and everything. Came down this morning, water in my basement. Had to rip everything apart again. And now we're back to square one. I think I know where it's coming from though. Oh, and also my Christmas lights that I'd all set up on Alexa where I could just say, turn on the outdoor lights. And it would turn all my Christmas lights on. That's not working because of this storm. So I'm in a grumpy mood. My whole day was spent wet vacking and trying to replug in lights that I already did.
Maybe we can start again. I'm a little sorry that I suggested we do this now.
Listen, these are what you call luxury problems. How about this exercise? As I was vacuuming and I was in a rage, I started saying to myself, thank you, God, I have a house to be flooded. Thank you, God, I have a house to be flooded. And it did no good, but at least I stopped cursing and breaking things.
I applaud your effort. Well done.
You're going to put me right back in a good mood, and so are the P4P audience, Tony, because we've got a movie to talk about tonight. This is going to be Talk to Me from 2022, I believe. Yes. We're also going to do our top three. I think we're doing Holiday Hijinks as a Christmas holiday special. Our top three, basically Christmas moments in movie or any sort of... Well, I guess in a sense, Christmas movies and these type of movies have paranormal aspects to them anyway, because the notion of a man flying with reindeer and all the magic therein is strictly paranormal, explainable, correct?
I guess so. You could argue that any Christmas theme movie at all is paranormal and belongs in the discussion.
Yes. Also, Tony, you're going to continue to take us to the movies with, we are in what, 1930?
32.
Let's go. 1932, a great year for film.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, as I'll learn, because I really don't know. Listen, I just kvetched the entire time, the beginning of this podcast, which I feel terrible about. What's going on with you? It's not very Maddie of me. I'm off my game.
You were going to bring you into the light. We're going to bring you into a brighter universe starting now.
With demonic possession.
With my, yes. Now, what have I got? There's a couple of things, I guess. You know what? I want to do a little plug for my brother and his company. He's got this liquor business, and they make this incredible aquavit called Batch 22. It's a new thing, but it's been winning a lot of awards, and it's available a lot of places all over the West Coast. And it just became available here in New York City. So if any listeners are in the New York area, they can try this fantastic he's not paying me anything to say this fantastic aquavit at Swift Bar downtown New York City. I'm gonna go down there and check it out later this week, but it's quite something and worth the trip. You had a question, sir?
Two questions. One, why aren't they paying us as an advertiser? They're winning all these awards.
A follow-up question. Go ahead. I'll answer both at the same time.
Follow-up. What's the name of his company?
It's called Batch 22. You can learn more about it at Batch 22, at drinkbatch22.com.
They don't perchance do basements, asking for a friend.
I'll find out. They may.
I'll tell you what they could do for me. I could slug back some of that stuff right now. I'll tell you that.
You could use one. That's why I bring it up. It sounded like you could use a drink. So have a virtual cocktail in your own mind. Batch 22.
Could you define the type of liqueur that is? Aquavit? I don't know.
I'm
I've
gonna
never
do a
heard of
terrible
that.
job because you know this is my brother's business. I'm
Understood.
not
Yeah,
involved
no,
in it.
understood.
Aquavit is a, I believe, a traditionally Scandinavian drink. I think it's like the drink of that part of the world. Like it's there. I know that's not a nation. I'm terrible geography. I don't
It's
know it.
okay. Like, so Vikings
In
probably
the
drank it.
colder Viking areas of the world,
Sure.
Aquavit's a big deal, and it's kind of like a neutral alcohol that's flavored with natural herbs and different flavors.
I
So
see.
it's great for mixing, or you can drink it on the rocks. It's
I
great
think
stuff.
that's all kidding aside, I've been aware of this, Matthew, doing this, and I'm so happy it's taken off. I know that's a tough business. So the fact that they're doing well, and it's a crowded space, I know that too. So they're winning awards, and that's just
Yeah,
awesome.
they're
Good for
doing really
him.
good and they're expanding.
Wow.
So check it out. That's part
Phenomenal.
of that's been part of my week, this new bar that's, well, it's not a new bar, but this place that's selling his stuff. That's really cool. Saw a couple of good things,
Wait,
you
hold on.
know.
So you went, there's an establishment near you that sells your brother's
As I said,
alcohol?
yeah,
Oh,
there's a bar called Swift
how great.
in the city downtown on 34th St on no on 4th Street downtown, New
How
York City.
great.
Swift, and they started selling it, and they're making cocktails with it and stuff.
That's the other reason I'm f***ing grumpy.
Whoa. Wow.
This past weekend, Taylor Swift, the singer, came into Gillette Stadium, and I used to be a Patriots fan, born and raised, and rabid Patriots fan. And when they got rid of Tom Brady, I was out. I was like, how can you guys let this guy go? He's the greatest player to ever play, right? Everyone's like, oh, well, it's a system, it's Belichick. It's a. All right. So we're now in the basement. And this past weekend, Taylor Swift's in the crowd, and half the people were there just to see her, and they're all cheering, ooh, just hit the ground. She's wearing Kansas City Chiefs jersey because she's dating one of the Kansas City Chiefs. That's why she's there in our stadium. Her dad's pointing to the Kansas City Chief thing, like, ooh. I go, do you understand that Larry Bird back in the day, if there had been like if John Mellencamp or whoever was a big star back then was in the crowd going like, oh, pointing to his Indiana Pacers jersey, he would have gone up and removed him himself and then won the game. And we're all going, ooh, Taylor Swift. I'm like, well, good, you got what you deserved. Now all you have, it's got nothing to do with the football. The Patriots are done. They're out of the playoffs. You're all applauding this pop monster.
I mean, I'm sorry. I have so little to say about any of it, as I don't indulge in any of the things that you're talking about. So I'm kind of out of the conversation.
I'm glad I left the Patriots behind. I'm glad. I'm like you now. I've become you where I'm like sports. Ooh, sports.
It's not me. Stop it. Oh my God, you're giving me such a bad rap. Totally true, but don't, no reason to do it on the show.
All right. Let's get me into a good mood finally. Let's go to 1932. Find out what was going on in paranormal film. Tony, take me away. Calgon, take me away.
And now Tony takes us to the movies this week.
1932. It seems like it's exploding. Like paranormal movies are taken off this year. After the success of Dracula, I think primarily they knew
Right.
they had something really, really big here. And they'd always been making fantasy movies and stuff from the very beginning of the first motion pictures, for sure. But 1932 seems to be like, starts to be like peak fantasy time. And you got a bunch of movies here, I guess in descending order of my interest in them, or public interest might be. But we have the famous movie Freaks,
Oh, yeah.
directed by Todd Browning, who did Dracula the year before.
Yeah, we had mentioned that last
Yeah.
week. Yeah.
And the lost film London After Midnight, which no one can see anymore. And Freaks is a classic, and really one of the top 10 most disturbing movies I think I've ever seen. It's pretty scary. It
It's
works as a horror movie.
uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a
Second
good
up's
way.
gotta be Island of Lost Souls. So the classic Island of Dr. Moreau story, the first time it was ever done, based on the H.G. Wells book. With Charles Laughton and Bela Lugosi. It's what Charles Laughton is making all these hybrid humans, animal human hybrids, in his laboratory on this island, and it holds up. It's got Bela Lugosi in it, as I said, and Kathleen Burke as Lotta, the Panther Woman, and
Hello.
she's a lot of Panther Woman. It's
She is a lot of Panther Woman.
fantastic.
This is like the third movie, I believe. It's a very short list of the movies you've done so far that I have seen.
You've seen this one,
Yeah, and I think this one is so much better than any of the other like kind of recreations, like that one with the one they did with it was what's his name's one of his last movies, Brando. God, that's
Oh
a
my,
mess.
yeah.
That movie's
Well,
a mess.
that's a real crazy mess. And there's a great documentary about the making of that
Oh,
movie,
really?
which you should track
Oof.
down. That's just
Oof.
really, really funny. I mean, that's a classic, just nightmare film to work on. Yeah, but this one's great. This is a classic, black and white,
Yeah.
very creepy and atmospheric and really good.
Get everything ready. For what? This time I'll burn out all the animal in her. I'll make her completely human.
Next up, we've got A Vampire, which is another vampire movie. Now,
Okay.
vampire movies are definitely like coming fast and furious. This
It's
one's
happening
a
now.
real art movie by this guy, Carl Theodore Dreyer, who'd made a very famous movie called The Passion of Joan of Arc. You might have seen a silent movie about Joan of Arc,
Oh, okay.
famous for its faces and portraits of people.
Sure.
And this is like this kind of surreal, atmospheric, not talky at all. Real art, like it's like an art school movie, you know, it's an art movie for sure. It doesn't make a whole lot of narrative sense for most of it, but the imagery is really powerful and it's great. And there's some really cool in-camera effects that are worth checking out. And yeah, so fans of like 30s spooky 30s
Oh
movies
God,
who don't
yeah.
know Vampire, it's great for
Holy
that.
moly, I'm looking at the trailer now. It's terrifying just from the trailer.
Yeah, really scary. Really well,
It's
scary and just and disjointed in a way, like dream logic, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna check that out. It looks very, you know what it looks a little like? Films where they show found films like The Ring or something,
Yes.
and you're
Yes.
watching this old film and you're like, whoa, and then it
Yeah.
comes out of the screen or something. It looks like that. It's
It
very
does. It
terrifying.
has that kind of quality to it. Or like, you know, the older, even older ones, it's got a lot of expressionism in it too.
A drifter obsessed with the supernatural stumbles upon an inn where a severely ill adolescent girl is slowly becoming a vampire. Oh my God, I'm going to check this
Yeah,
out immediately.
it's got what I would imagine to be the earliest example of a girl, of a someone getting possessed. It's like a possesso
Wow.
moment, a whole scene about her. She becomes like a demon.
Holy moly.
It's
Oh God, yeah, she's
pretty
spooky.
cool. Yeah.
She's smiling at the moon, all like
And the
possessed.
vampire in it is this elderly woman who's this countess
Ooh.
who's She's like in her 80s and she's got a
Oh,
cane and she's, it's really interesting.
this looks like the scariest movie of the year, actually, from the trailer or the
It's a
clips I'm
slow,
watching.
it's slow and atmospheric, but creepy. Yeah. Yeah.
Vampyr,
That's correct.
1932. All right, that's a great one. You also just made me feel better because you said, because we realized like Dracula came out the year before, right? And then
Yeah.
you're like, all these vampire Dracula movies are coming out fast and furious. And it actually made me feel better because one of my complaints, like, oh, these days, all they do is producers in Hollywood, right? They try to, oh, I want the next one. I want the next one. But it's been going on forever.
Forever. I mean, you know, the minute that Lugosi and Karloff showed up on the scene last year, you'll see they're in now, and they're going to be making movies in these with these characters for forever. So it's kind of like, you know, the Marvel Universe was the Universal Monster Verse for a long time. Then we got so next up, Murders in the Rue Morgue, directed by Robert Flory, another Bela Lugosi movie. Famous for a beautiful art direction and a gorilla that kidnaps a woman and carries her over the rooftops of London.
Oh,
It was
wow,
a kind of a
cool.
precursor to King Kong in a way.
Oh, cool,
And
right.
all the cutaways to the gorilla's face are of a baby chimpanzee, which is pretty funny.
Anything else in
Yeah, other
32?
recommended notable mentions would be 13 Women with Myrna Loy and Irene Dunne, about a biracial woman who was bullied at school and then takes revenge through mesmerism on 13
Whoa.
classmates.
How you been, you old so-and-so? Oh, gosh, it's good to see you. When I saw you were here, I simply had to come in and say hello.
That's swell. Come on, step into it, honey. We're on next. I'll be right back.
What's the matter, June? I'll have to tell you. I've got to tell somebody to get it out of my head. Hazel, I shouldn't go on with this act. I'm afraid. Afraid of what?
And of course, we had The Mummy with Karloff, the famous first.
I've seen that one, too.
Mummy. Yeah. Yep. And then we had White Zombie, which is probably not everybody's.
Oh, is that about me vacuuming up water all afternoon?
It is. It is. It is a it's a fairly insensitive portrait of of the Haitian religion.
I see.
But it's also Bela Lugosi, who plays a Westerner who dabbles in voodoo and then creates zombies.
Oh my god.
The Mind Blower, though, I'm going to hit y'all with something really heavy. This is a movie that ended up, I didn't know it was made in 29, but they released it in Europe in 32. So everybody thinks of it as from 32. It's called Queen of Atlantis, and it's directed by probably the most famous German director of his day, of that time, named Georg Wilhelm Pabst, like Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Okay.
And this is absolutely mind blowing.
Really?
One of those movies that you can't believe was made when it was made. It's so efficient and modern.
Really?
And the budget's insane. They went to the Sahara Desert and they did action scenes that are so incredible and well edited and efficient. It's such a good movie. And it's on YouTube. You can see it. It's not even dubbed, but it's worth just looking at because what they did is incredible.
I don't want to watch it, but I'm definitely not going to watch it if it's all in French.
Watch it and fast forward it a little bit. Like, you'll love the photography right away. It's beautifully photographed. And then you'll like fast forward 15 minutes and you'll get into this action stuff and it'll blow your mind. It's just incredible. 1932.
Thank you, buddy. White Zombie thanks you.
You're doing it again tonight?
No.
Please. It's my mom's Remembrance Day.
Cannot go for more than 90 seconds. Am I clear?
What happens after 90 seconds?
Don't want to stay. Light the candle to open the door. Blow it out to close it. Put your hand on it. Now say, talk to me.
Talk to me.
When a group of friends discover how to conjure spirits using an embalmed hand, they become hooked on a new thrill until one of them goes too far and unleashes terrifying supernatural forces. This is 2022's Talk to Me. We are going to get into this one. There will be spoilers. I know there will be. So we're just one of those podcasts. We just talk about it. If you haven't seen it, pause it and then go see it. I'm too tired to worry about you, whether you saw it or not.
It's a pretty new movie, though.
I don't care.
We have to be a little bit, you know, sensitive.
Unless you're going to come here and help me clean up the water, I don't want to hear from anyone.
All right, you talk about anything you want.
Tony, this film I knew nothing about. I saw one trailer of this teen girl like grabbing the hand. It's an A24 joint. Yeah, I saw the trailer of this teen party, the girl grabbing the hand and then clearly like kind of being possessed. And that's all I saw about it. And I'll be honest, I try to find ways really to kind of like love movies. You know, I go into it wanting it to be good because I want to get on the roller coaster and enjoy the ride. But when I saw the trailer for this, I admit it. I was like, no thanks. I just thought it was another kind of teen possesso, one of these movies that we've seen a billion times. Opening scene's a cold open. So let's start right at the beginning. And very early, the kids walk into this teen party, this rap music playing. I'm very just like have my clicker in my hand, ready to fast forward, you know, like I'm not going to like this movie. I can tell already it's going to be drunken teens and some sort of sex morality or some crazy thing we've seen a million times. And I found myself going, huh, that was an interesting opening scene. I was kind of taken by it and it gave me pause to just reset, recalibrate and say, all right, watch this movie for what it is. You know, stop kind of judging what you think it is.
Like you, I didn't like the trailer at all. I expected to kind of really just not enjoy myself.
Yes.
I thought I'd seen it before, you know.
Same.
And the minute the needle dropped on this, I was like, oh, okay. It didn't even take me through the full scene. The minute that first shot started, everything was so on point. I was like, oh, okay, we're in hands of somebody who's really thought this movie through. Like, yes, right away, you see it in that first shot. And it's a follow shot. You follow this guy, this kind of surfer guy, through this big house party from outside all the way through by the pool and then inside. They cover it really well, but it's not just nicely shot. It's like they picked the right lens. The party is really going on. It feels dangerous. It doesn't feel like a fake kind of, like, it didn't feel like an assistant director like organized the background for you. It feels like they're really at this crazy party and you're really there. And then you notice that this guy who's walking through the party is actually like on some kind of a mission, and they come around and they're after following him. And now we're like backtracking and we see his face, and this guy, he can act like he's actually in it. You know, he's not faking this. So literally from the, before anything happened, I was like, oh, okay, this is, they're making a movie here. They're really serious about this. And it didn't disappoint. That first sequence is a shocker. It really works. And so, yeah, I was won over probably before you were, but it was that in that first few minutes.
Same. We go from that, and I want to skip ahead a little bit, because the next thing we get into is we meet our lead, Mia, a 17-year-old Mia, who's, we find out her mother has passed from a suicide, and she's with her friend. And we kind of, and there's this scene of Mia on a bed with her friend, and they're just like talking like teenage girls. Again, you always use that term, we're in good hands. That scene right there, I knew, I go, this movie's the real deal, where you just get this really real, well-acted, well-developed scene between two girls on a bed. And I was like, man, this thing is off to a really good start. I loved both these scenes.
Yeah. And even before, I think when she, Mia, played by the excellent Sophie Wilde, I think she's just great in this movie, picks up the little brother of her best friend. That happens before.
Oh, right. Yes.
She's clearly a close family friend of this family's. And so she picks up the younger brother to take him home. And it's kind of in the evening, and they're in the car together, and they're singing to a song on the radio, which is a thing you see in a lot of movies where, you know, actors try to pretend like no one's there and they're really uninhibited. And these two just, like, it's one of the best versions of people singing along to a song on the radio I've ever seen. They're totally in it. And then there's the animal in the road trope, right?
Yeah.
Where you think because they're singing, they're going to have a car accident, because every horror movie has that car accident.
Yeah.
And then they don't, but they come across an animal who's already been hit. Yes. And I thought the way they handled that was like they took this trope and they were kind of doing something a little bit new with it. And I was, again, I was like, yes, great, we're on. And then the scene with her friend, I'm like, oh, they're really good actors. They're really characters. They're not playing teenagers. They're playing these two girls. And yeah.
And this is one of those examples that we've talked about sometimes, Tony. It's like a Tony and Maddie rule. Like, you're going to sell me this big monster possession movie or monster movie, whatever it is, but I don't believe these people have had breakfast together.
Yeah, exactly.
This movie was the opposite. It was like, it was so lived in that bedroom. Like, I got the sense, or I felt like Mia and Jade, that's the best friend character's name. Like, Mia had been in this room a million times. She practically lives there. Like, all that worked right off the bat. It was so lived in and so believable.
Yeah. And then, of course, with Miranda Otto, who's like the only adult in the film as the mom, and she's great.
I mean,
she's fantastic. You just believe that family.
Believe
you
the
see
house,
the history of Mia's relationship with the family right away. Every family has that kind of semi-adopted friend who's always around kind of thing. And they just depicted that perfectly.
Perfectly. This movie kind of has like everything going against it in a way of like, what I thought we would be excited about and like even when I found out the first time filmmakers were like YouTubers, I was like, and it's like a Gen Z movie and it's about possession. It's like all these things, I'm like, oh, this is gonna be a rough one for Tony and I. And it just continued to impress. And even when they make cliches or tropes that are in movies, they handle it in a different type of way. or they do something with it for the most part where I was like pleasantly surprised.
Well, they seem to be having a real comment on this stuff. The filmmakers seem to have a real opinion about, for instance, social media or TikTok, yep, or these TikTok challenges that you hear about, you know?
Yep.
And their opinion about it and their take on it isn't about making the coolest movie. It's actually something you think they actually feel like, oh, this is a problem. Like, this is a problem socially with young people. Yes. These kids are in trouble because of this technology. Yes. There's a real problem here and they're in danger. And it seems to be coming out of that rather than, you know, just trying to be current. So they really attack it in the storytelling. They really do stuff in the storytelling that involves it in an interesting way.
Which is doubly interesting when you consider that these two guys cut their teeth and made their fame on social media. It's sure. A YouTube channel they're famous for. They have 2 billion downloads. They have millions and millions of followers on the show they do. So for them to reflect upon the downside of all this is very interesting. And I think you're right. They did a great job of that.
Well, they would know, wouldn't they?
Yeah, right.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought in that way, like the movie, I thought, okay, well, the other pitfall for a lot of these movies is the social commentary becomes very top heavy for me.
Yes.
And this teeters on that a little sure. bit, but I think that they make a very good case for it in this movie. They handled the themes well, and they really went there as opposed to kind of soft pedaling the emotions or faking anything. It was a really good take on bullying and social media mm-hmm. and dangerous things in youth culture today and peer pressure, mental health issues. Like, these are big kind of like neon signs, and in most movies they're just blinking on and off, right? And in this movie they lit them well, and they're like really incorporated well. So,
and grief, I think grief's a
grief
huge,
for sure. Yeah, yeah, big time. Yeah.
And I want to talk about that and why this movie struck me particularly with what Mia's trying to do with her mother. But basically, as I said, the mother's gone, and what happens is Mia and her friend Jade and Jade's little brother Riley go to one of these gatherings that they're kind of alluding to of these other teens who have found a hand. It's a disembodied hand. And kids get together. What they do is they grab the hand, they have a procedure, and then you can then basically talk to spirits, almost be possessed by these spirits and be into some kind of other world. And what's very interesting, Tony, and this was unique too, we've seen it a million times in all kinds of different movies. These teens had it under control. They were kind of controlling it, which is very unique. I'm trying to think. There was a movie when people like made themselves be dead for a while.
Oh, Flatliners?
Yeah, like a Flatliners. Mm-hmm. So it's not completely revolutionary, but in terms of like using a Ouija board, and this is kind of, I said to myself in my notes, like this is like a modern take on a Ouija board, right? Or a different take on a Ouija board. It's a hand in this case, which is a neat idea. But in either case, when you're using a Ouija board, those are always depicted as like, it's out of control and the demons are here. And these kids had a system, and it reminded me, and I'm sure this is quite an obvious ham-handed observation because it seems to be quite obvious, but it's like, this was almost an allegory or an analogy for like drug use or a trip.
Well, right on.
By teens. Yeah.
That's actually what, you know, if you, there's a couple of interviews with the directors and they said that was the pitch. It's like, what if kids found a way to use supernatural stuff as a drug?
which man, what an interesting idea. Rush of it.
They have it under control as much as any heroin addict does. They think they've got it.
Well, they
think
they do. Right? That's right. Yeah, yeah. They have their little rules. And
little
so
system.
So far, as long as you get out at this time, then it goes away and all these rules.
Yeah, but not
learned.
Even so far, because the first thing we see is this thing has gone horribly wrong. And we can only assume it has only been horribly wrong.
Right. As far as these two, the two kind of bullyish characters, I guess bullies in it, who have the hand, they seem to have this under control. They present it as if, like, here's what you do. No, you got to be out in however many seconds and all this. Which was so interesting.
So did you see, we were initially going to cover this a few weeks ago, and then we got some monkey wrenches thrown into our system.
My fault.
Now we're doing it.
Yes.
No, I'm not throwing blame. Maddie's totally at fault. I saw it a while ago, actually before we thought to do that. And then, so I had to see it again.
Yes.
Did you see it twice or have you only seen it once?
I did. My plan was to just skim through it. So I saw it and then a few weeks had gone by and my plan was to skim through it because I'm like, I don't have time to watch it. And I found myself watching the whole thing. Basically, I did fast forward a couple little parts that I remembered distinctly, or that were maybe like a little lulls in the action type of thing. But and I liked it better because here's the thing. I had questions, narrative questions about it that were kind of demerits for me a little bit. Like, well, why did she do this? And why did this happen? And when I watched it the second time, they actually answer most of the questions I had with little asides, little comments, little things. Yeah. And it's like, you got to be paying attention. For example, one of the big questions I have at the end, which we'll get to, is kind of answered in that original cold open. In other words, I won't get into the weeds, but he basically kind of sets up the rules early, or some of the rules. And I go, oh, okay, that informed a lot later. So that's just one example of these little Easter eggs they leave if you're paying attention.
Yeah, I think their world makes sense. Like, the world they built for this movie and the rules of the paranormal engagement that's happening makes sense. And, on second viewing, I feel less interested in the second half of the movie. I'll be totally honest. I think the first half is the best half of this film. And the first half really, really delivers, and that excitement carried me through some of the second act. And the second act doesn't work as well. It doesn't feel like the ideas in it are as exciting as the ideas in the first half.
Yeah.
That being said, the actors are good enough to carry me through what I feel like they're vamping through some of the plot with the characters and trying to make good. Here's where they do, I think, get in a little trouble with the amount of thematic subtext they're trying to do, is that they have to answer for all those themes in the second half in a way where you're just like, let's just get to her problem right now.
I'd agree.
So
in the very, very, very end is arguably a bit of a miss, but there's so much.
The very, very, very end?
Yes.
The button end? Well, or the climax of the movie?
What she does and how she...
Agreed. Don't totally go there with it. I don't think, particularly in second viewing, it didn't feel like a culmination of this story that felt satisfying.
Little unjustified at times and things she was doing. And
however, it does, to me, get redeemed by the very, very, very end, which is kind of a coda to the end.
Yes.
Which is, I think, like... let the right one in level.
Very similar. And it kind of sets up another, like, I think they're going to make a second one probably. And
I'm sure they're doing it now.
It goes wrong. The more they do this with the hand, of course, inevitably all their rules that I mentioned before, the rules they think work with this thing, of course, because they're dealing with demons, quickly doesn't work. And it really starts to fall apart when they allow the little brother, Riley, to use the hand. He's not as old as them. And, you know, again, you can't watch it and not think, like, what if you let your little brother take one of the hits of acid or whatever, right?
Yeah,
like,
or, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, he's like, just too young, and they like some of the bullies to go, give him some acid and see what happens, it goes as badly as you think it could possibly go.
That scene in particular is so unique. It kind of breaks into this music video. You know that camera craze everyone's doing at, like, corporate parties? And they do it in Times Square, where you stand and then the camera revolves around you in 360 and everyone stands like this and, like, looks fancy. It's like this new thing they're doing, red carpets and corporate parties. They kind of use that technique, 360 spins and the camera's all over the place. And there's a incredible pumping song thumping, and it becomes a party scene, with demonic possession. And I thought, you know, I'm always saying, like, show me something new, man. Show me something new. And boy, these guys, they hit it out of the park with that scene.
Classic scene. It's a modern classic scene. It really is.
Thank you. That's awesome. Yeah. I was kind of doing the math because, oh, by the way, next week we'll be back with our year in review. We're going to make some decisions about this past year in 2023, I think.
Okay.
We'll both rank some of our films. And I immediately was like, this is in the running for scene of the year, if not an all-timer.
It's a clever, clever scene. It's so clever that you almost feel like you've seen it before and you haven't. It's pretty cool. And what I really love about it is that it's not just they don't just stop the movie to have this crazy montage musical number. Like, it comments on it. It actually is really creepy when you get past how cool it is. Underneath that is something really, really, really wrong and horrifying.
Yes.
And And so it works, and it makes sense in the story. It's not just like some break to have fun for a few minutes in the movie.
Yeah, it wasn't them like showing off their skills. It was you were basically seeing this thing as they see it in their subconscious and in their minds that this is
Yeah.
fun, this is daring, this
Well,
is
the rush of it,
adrenaline,
you know.
this is the rush, this is awesome. And you're kind of like, they're showing you, they're making you feel what the teens probably
Well,
feel in that moment.
I don't know if we made it clear, but they're asking to be possessed for 90 seconds,
Thank you. I should
right?
have laid it
They're
out better.
asking to
Yes.
be possessed by some
It's like a
spirit
game. Yep.
for 90 seconds, and then they can turn that off by blowing the candle out and taking your hand off of the hand that you're touching breaks the chain, right? And any more than 90 seconds is dangerous, and blah, blah, blah. So you can do the math. Things don't just go according to their plan sometimes.
Right.
And but you never really get away from the idea that, I mean, we've all seen YouTube videos of people, like, I guess we've all, I have anyway, like watching people do drugs like salvia or something, where they'll take a hit and film themselves just losing it, like falling over and not being able to, you know. And you watch those things with horror sometimes, just like in real life. And this was the same kind of thing of just like the horror of where people are, where their minds are at, that would want to do that.
And there are scenes like where Mia, when things go really bad with her little brother, with her friend's little brother, excuse me, her best friend's little brother Riley, and like it's horrible. What happens in that scene is like he gets really messed up.
It's like hereditary bad.
It's
It's
hereditary bad.
messed
He
up.
gets maimed and it just keeps going on. And she just like walks out of the room into a hallway and stands there. The level of trauma that she just experienced, everyone just watched, like watching a friend overdose or something like that, or watching someone get killed. Just the decision to film, to show her, just, I need to leave this scene. It's like
It
every
feels
decision is so
very real.
real.
Well, they're not, you know, and that's why, like, the party that this for the first seance hand party that you go to, you got a bad feeling about it. You just do, and it's set up that way, and you see it on there's like a TikTok group or whatever, and they're sharing videos within this group of these crazy things that happen at the party. So you really believe that they'd go and be intrigued to go, but that it also is a place you're like, don't go. This is not good. This is not good. And it has that feeling of like that song, like Mama Told Me Not to Come, that you know, is it Three Dog Night? And
Think
you
so,
just, like,
yeah.
you're at that party, and it really captures that feeling of when you're too young to be at a kind of a little bit more adult party. You
Yes.
know, you're really feeling it through the eyes of this kid who ends up getting so badly fucked up. And it gave me that sense of being, you know, 3 or 4 years younger than the other kids that you're hanging around, and how dangerous that feels and how much at risk it feels. And they just captured that so well.
They
And my
did.
guess is that, and it's impossible to tell how they contributed, you know, ultimately, unless you're at the rehearsals. But a lot of times when directors, and these are young directors, but when they're working with a young cast, if they're smart, they'll allow them to bring their vernacular to it, because they may be feeling like, even if they're in their early 20s, that these directors might and writers might feel too old to capture that teenage language of today. And so they probably just let them riff on the lines to put it into more of their, you know, current vernacular. So, because it feels like legit, it feels like it's legitimately how young kids in Australia may be talking today,
Yes, a
without
hundred
it being kind
percent.
of phony.
Even the cool kids, quote unquote, in this movie who have the hand, I see them as outcasts too. Like I think they were outcasts in a certain way also. Like everyone was
Yeah,
lost.
that's a
Everyone was lost.
great observation. I think, yeah. I mean, yeah. In a way, there's no villains. Like, they play these, there's two characters that organize these parties. Yeah, I got the feeling that all of these young people were from troubled homes, that they were all suffering from something. They weren't villains. They weren't. I felt like, even though, you know, they all end up having a conscience. They all end up coming to some realization that they may have gone too far. And that was a nice gift to give these characters, you know, after everything they go through. So there's not really any bad guys in it. They're just misguided, you know, and that was kind of interesting.
In fact, the easy decision would have been to have those two kind of, again, I'll say quote unquote bullies, the two who are kind of orchestrating this and had the hand, have them push the little kid to the point where that happened. But in actuality, when you watch the scene, I didn't even see them necessarily as nihilistic. It's more just caught up in the rush of this. And that's like, this is, we found this thing and it is this new drug, quote unquote. It's awesome.
If that's if not nihilistic, I'm never partying with you ever, ever. You scared me. That's the scariest thing you've ever said on the show.
Well, think about it. I mean, it's in a sense, an attempt of them, and especially given what we just said, they seem to be maybe from broken homes. They all seem to be having something that's a little off and wrong, and they're hurting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they just want to like come on and do this thing with us. It's you're gonna have a blast, yeah. man. This just do what yeah. we say, though. Do what we say, you know. Yeah. So it's interesting. It's multi-layered. It's not just these characters aren't tropes, they're not easily defined.
Well, that's exactly what we mean by like you believe they have breakfast. You believe they went to have breakfast or said, you know, what's for breakfast. Like you believe that they're in this position. You understand why they would do this to begin with without it being over explained,
yes.
you know? And, that's, you know, that's just really good work.
The little brother Riley is now possessed. He's got one of these things. It's not leaving him. And it kind of then splits a little bit where Mia is really lost in a sense in trying to communicate with her mother. And that's kind of what she pursues in the second half, while Riley is now trapped in this possession, this awful state. I think the movie really kind of does focus on what grief does to someone. And so, like, I couldn't help but think of this. When my mother died, I found myself, I would have done anything for a sign, for, you know, her to appear, whether it be through a psychic or anything like that. And I had some stuff happen that was pretty incredible, you know, and I had it explained to me, be very careful about this stuff. Demons will be able to use information that, yes, indeed, only your mother would have known, and then use that. And so then now you're getting away from, in my case, what you should be focused on, right, as part of my faith. So now you're listening to these messages of, oh, but your mother's here, and watching Mia go through this, like getting this information and being so focused on, I want to contact my mother on the other side. I want to cut. And the demon using that desire was so heartbreaking for me to watch. Like, oh, that's, she's not telling you the truth. You know, don't fall for it. And, but at the same time, you're empathizing with her. Like, of course she wants to hear her mother's okay. So it's like, it's this evil using a good intention. I want to know what happened to my mother. I want to know why she killed herself. I want to know if she's okay. And the demon using that, twisting it. And I just thought that was such a well done and heartbreaking twist on the whole possession thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is. It definitely is. I mean, I found it heartbreaking. What I loved about, I guess, you know, what I love about this movie to me, though, is how hard it is on Mia. I love that about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I don't mean that she goes through hell. I mean, yes, she does. This character goes through absolute literal hell. But I love the fact that there's something seems to be maybe wrong with Mia that isn't just grief or losing her mother a couple of years ago. And it's hard to figure. It's subtle and it's not like in the script. It's nothing you can really point to, except one of the creepiest things in the movie to me is how subtly they play her flirtation with Riley.
Yeah.
She is playing a character who's very lost and very, very, very needy. And there's no way to tell whether that neediness started after the mother died or not. That
right.
You're not told that. In fact, it's implied by Miranda Otto, who's the mom of the family she's kind of adopted by in a way, that she's maybe overstayed or like it's always yes. been a little much.
Yes. And she's very quick to hate her yeah. when something goes bad.
Right. And she has an unhealthy attachment to everybody in this movie. She has a yes. very needy, clingy, manipulative, controlling, yes. weird dynamic with the sister played by Alexandra Jensen, who plays Jade. She's great. With the little brother, Riley, who she actually is like kind of flirty with in a kind of inappropriate way a couple of times.
That rain scene is a little uncomfortable. Yeah. When they're
yeah. in bed. And so you get the feeling that there's some, that she's unbalanced. There's something's wrong with her.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because that fits into one of my theories. And that's why another reason, another level why that's heartbreaking is I have a suspicion that the mother, like this is just me. And I don't know if the filmmakers meant to put this out there, but this is what I took, that there's an insinuation of feeling that even though we're seeing Mia's first introduction to this kind of thing, it's not the first kind of introduction to this type of thing with the mother. The mother, why did she kill herself? And is the hand's been around for a while. Is there another hand in the town? Like, or, you know, has this hand been floating around for a while? So that there actually might be an already residual residue demony thing going on with Mia. And
maybe
that would explain this kind of like uncomfortable longing beyond just right. The good desire to know what happened to mommy, which I also think is there, but also kind of like
a lot of people
like
say
demon attraction.
A lot of people say it's generational. So, you know, that would make sense too.
That's said too. Right. Exactly. And so the demons will latch on to you. And then when they want to kill you, basically they want you dead. And so they achieved that with her mother.
I think the feeling I got was that some of them did and some of them didn't. I mean, it depended. Like, I thought it would depend on what spirit you ran into, that they wanted to possess you because they wanted to live life. But if they were, you're nodding like you know, like you've got a handbook.
No, do. I'm saying that's a great take. I took it as even I took it as they're all trickster and they might use
spoiler alert though.
Yes.
The very end of the movie, do you then qualify her as now a demon? She wants to live again. I don't know if she wants to kill the person. You know, she just wants to be alive.
The demon did their job and killed her. And what she wants now is ancillary. Like, maybe she wants to live again in a good way, but she's going to probably do what they do anyway. You know,
all right, well, you're just the Bible scholar. You're not making any sense specifically.
I'm just saying, like, you know, they achieved their end. She destroyed herself. And
gotcha.
Destroyed her. Right. So then now, just because she's on the other side and might want to live in her initial motivations were good.
But you said that any demon matter. Reaching out to people on the living side would want to kill them. And I'm saying that can't be true because this girl doesn't want to kill anybody. She just wants to reach out and live again. So some of these entities they meet are good or harmless. And some of them are probably demonic. You can't tell though what you're getting into.
But a demon's different than like a soul who passes. Right. So demons are angels.
By what you said in the podcast. I didn't read the Bible before we started the show.
So I get, well, it's an interesting point. They didn't mean to go this far with it, but like there's human souls, right? Like you and me are souls, if you believe in that kind of thing. And then there are angels and demons who are pure spirit. They were never people. They were like the devil and all that. Like they're just spirits. We don't know what they are. They're demons. They're on a higher plane, higher spiritual plane. But what they can't do is like suffer in a body like we can. So there is a difference between a demon and a human soul who was to pass. Yeah, I guess that's what I would say to that, is that the demons who are coming through this hand got her where they want her. Now, whether she's going to go out and do their bidding or whether she's going to go out and try and be a good person, I don't know.
I think you're looking, I don't see that complexity. I just see that she has now become on the other side of the mirror. Now she is right. Dead, reaching out to the living. What she wants to do, I don't know, but she seems to want to experience life because she's lonely in the dark.
I hope
so. She wants to for 90 seconds be around people.
Right.
Because she gets to drink and party and see friends when she is, you know, when somebody says, let me in, she's like online, ready to go.
Right. Which is probably hell.
Well,
like if that's your eternity, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean?
It doesn't look like a very good place.
No. Well, look at this discussion we're having now. It's like it's raised amazing questions, and we've kind of both interpreted it through our own worldview, which is really cool. You know what I mean?
Well, like, yeah, I mean, there's enough philosophy in it to you know, to make you keep thinking about it, even when the movie starts becoming a little predictable and a little bit like, let's, you know, just them trying to wrap it up a little bit.
Yes, yes. Yeah, some of the stuff that happens at the hospital is both like breathtaking and disturbing, and also maybe it goes on a little too long in the hospital.
I also don't believe they let her in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you can see the scissors in her back of the back pocket. There's things that you're like, okay, they got a little sloppy. But
the mother goes from hatred, vile hatred. Yeah, of her to like,
sure, go with you be alone with my son. That's a moment where I'm like,
but
no.
Then you could also, and now I'm probably defending the movie too much, but like you could make the cunningness of Mia, her, you know, if she does have one foot in dealing with these things, she's able to kind of like manipulate the mother a little bit to get what she wants. But yeah, that was a problem for me. I was kind of like, that was too easy.
Yeah.
But those are kind of nitpicky things. The scene in the hospital with Riley was like, whoa, man, when he's kind of like harming himself, like
it's really rough.
It is. It's like hereditary stuff. You're right. It's I wasn't as scared. Hereditary is one of those movies like where I was like, I shouldn't be here in this theater. I never kind of felt like that with this.
But
it was scary and it was really well done. I don't think it wasn't trying to be as atmospheric as Hereditary in that way. I don't think.
Well, you have the great distinction because there are like horror movies that feel like they are themselves evil. And then there's horror movies that feel like they're about evil, but that you're okay.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I vaguely prefer the former, but.
Oh God, the level of dread in that movie. I'm really, as time goes on, the more I think about Hereditary, it's like, I think it might be like the modern Exorcist. It's the closest thing that I can think of that I've seen that like had me that terrified, but
it's a humdinger, man.
Holy moly.
Ordinary people with beheadings.
Yes. It's like you get double bill of, family horror and devil and
dreadful.
Good Lord. So yeah, this was a little more teen than that, a little lighter. There's some humorous moments. There's a toe sucking reference. It's actually made me laugh out loud. As disturbing as the scene was, the after effect of it and the conversation.
That was going to be my recommendation for top three until this became a Christmas episode.
Whoa, top three toe socks?
Top three weird toe, like foot fetish moments in movies.
I don't think I can come up with three, unfortunately. Or fortunately.
Well, just any Tarantino movie and
oh, there you go.
Two of those and this.
There you go. So that's like, I think we've covered most of it. Is there anything we're leaving out, Tony, before we kind of vote on it?
Just there's a lot of lines in it for me that I love. Like the script has some wonderful little details in some of the language. Mia says... has this interchange with Riley when they're having that kind of inappropriate moment.
Yeah.
And he says, you'll never be alone because you'll always have me and Jade. And Mia says, it's okay. I don't feel alone anymore. Mm. And it's like little things like that, you know? And she says that when she's staring and she's lit. She's not lit, but you just see these pinpricks of white reflections in her eyes, which are terrifying.
That's a spooky scene. And that's another example of like what I think of like the mother and all that there's a hint of a backstory there that
might be
explored in the second one.
Miranda Otto slamming the door on the boyfriend is really funny. That's fantastic. A great moment.
Great.
The line from the boyfriend, which is so heartbreaking and great when he goes, yeah, I didn't do puberty right. Oh. I thought it was such a great line, particularly from this boy, you know, it's great. And
his trying to be good, like to watch him struggle.
Yeah, it seems like a legit
moral.
He's trying to be good.
Yeah, it's like kind of charming and
failing miserably.
In this movie where like the most horrific stuff is going on, in addition to that, you're also watching this kind of fight for goodness, and it's very, very interesting.
And this you're gonna have to bleep out, I guess. But there's a character named Haley. It's one of the bullies.
Yeah.
And played by this guy, Zoe Tarakis, I think it's how you pronounce the name.
Okay. Yep.
Line of the movie. Yo, this spirit is a.
Yeah.
It's very Sam Raimi.
Yes. I can't think of a better, like, if I was one of those Catholic exorcists that I follow on social media, I would lead with this, with anyone who is going to like play with a Ouija board or do any sort of. But, oh, let's talk to ghosts. Let's talk to, watch this movie. Okay.
Yeah.
See, you know what I mean? Like seriously. Then. Yeah. Seriously. It's definitely a cautionary tale, you know, in a really cool way, in a definitely non preachy way, of course. But boy, it makes you think about this stuff, like messing with that stuff. Cause it's intense.
First half rocks.
Yeah.
First half totally rocks.
All right. So that's actually a great segue into asking you, does the maybe not as strong third act and second half keep it off the shelf? Are you going to give this a rated P for paranormal and we're going to keep it, or P for past just not quite strong enough?
if it were just on the merits of the movie alone, I'd maybe be waffling, because the second half and second viewing just didn't, it didn't hold up for me. But the treatment of the paranormal in it is so unique, and using this, they pay due respect to it, and they also really show what it's like to not have respect for it and what happens then. And I think that's, they have something to say about the paranormal, unlike a lot of movies that may be tighter.
Yeah.
But so for me, it goes on because it's got such an interesting slant on it. And the first, and like I said, that first half is just such a rocket. It's great.
You know, I try to put on movies that we either just both love, obviously, or if it's not perfect, but somehow it's some sort of tentpole or something. And I think that's a great summation, what you just said. I think this movie is going to create a bunch of movies heretofore that try to do something like this with possession and turn into a game or a high. And we're going to see scenes like that party scene. Like, I just think it's like a tentpole movie. We're going to say there was a line in the sand here and everything was a little different after it.
There'll be a lot of crappy movies coming. Don't worry.
Absolutely. I mean it. Like, I think it's going to be kind of like a little bit influential, and it was definitely a moment in time and a place handled well. So I want to put it on the shelf because it's really good in a lot of ways.
Good, really good debut feature for these two.
Oh my God.
Filmmakers. And, you know, I mean, they're off to a really good career. They did a really good job.
They really did. And a lot of, I don't know, first time actors, but certainly new faces. And
new faces. I think they'd all done some work in, you know, in Australia on television, but a little bit. They all seem pretty new.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of them are not new anymore. I think looks like, I mean, it's a really good cast. It's a good ensemble of young actors. So.
Deservedly so.
Yeah.
Deservedly so. All right, Tony. So it's passing. It's on the shelf. Rated P for Paranormal. See, I feel better already. Let's do our top three. Here, take my hand.
No.
What if we opened the door, but we didn't shut it?
Oh my God, they followed us.
I like it.
They're not going to stop. They're never going to stop.
All right, we are going to take a Christmas break. We're going to come back in the new year with our 2024 review. We're going to do some rankings, look back on this year.
Yeah.
We'll also do 1933.
Does the year get on the shelf or not? We don't know.
Actually, it's a great question.
Maybe we don't put this year on the shelf. I don't want to put this year on the shelf.
Honest to God, it'd be interesting to look back. Well, we're going to look back. We're going to do that for you, and we'll be back. You can look at our 2023 reviews and see maybe what your favorites were. But because of that, we're going to take a little Christmas break, and we wanted to end with a little holiday theme. So we're going to do our top three holiday hijinks. Tony, this could mean anything. Holiday hijinks.
Wide berth.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into the Christmas and holiday and Hanukkah spirit. Okay, my number three, I'm going to throw a little curveball at you in honor, Tony, of the Jewish people, the fine Jewish people. I'm going to remember a sketch that I saw with my best friend, Marty, who is Jewish. Shout out, Marty. Hanukkah Harry on Saturday Night Live, played by John Lovitz. He saves Christmas. And my best friend, Marty, and I used to sing his theme song. I don't know if you remember, there's a theme song.
No.
And instead of reindeer, he had donkeys. And it'd go, on Moisha, on Herschel, on Shlomo. And he saved Christmas. And it's like it's kind of a sweet sketch. You have a young Mike Myers in it, and John Lovitz playing Hanukkah Harry. Santa gets sick, and Hanukkah Harry has to save Christmas by delivering toys.
I've donkeys. Never seen this. I have to track it down.
Yeah, it's obscenely offensive. Like, you could never do it now.
On Moshe, on Herschel, on Shlomo, says Hanukkah Harry, 8 nights a year. On Moshe, on Herschel, on Shlomo, means that Hanukkah Harry is here.
Or you can. Who knows? I don't know what you can and can't do.
I don't know. You could. I know. We're probably going to cancel from me mentioning the sketch. I don't know.
My number three. Sorry.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you.
That's going to be the opening of Black Christmas.
Oh, my God.
Which I've decided, initially we talked about that movie not being applicable to our show because it's not paranormal themed. On thinking about it, I can make a case for it being paranormal themed, and I'm going for it. And it's the opening. It's the POV shot approaching the house with the Christmas carols all distorted in the house. And you see the partiers, and they're using like an 18 millimeter Terry Gilliam lens and everything's mm-hmm. all weird. And the combination of just dread and Christmas cheer, I love. And it's just fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. And there's something about the, you could get the you could make the argument that the quote unquote slashers really like the language he's talking and stuff. Like there could be a little possesso element to that.
I firmly believe now that the concept is that it is a second coming movie, that it's like a weird inversion of Jesus arriving right. at that party, right? He kind of right. flies into that party and as this weird ghostly spirit lives upstairs and you think it's this killer, but it turns out there's another killer on the loose in town. And yeah. you don't know if he is the right. same person or if that's even a disembodied person or if we don't right. know.
So yeah, I think it does fit under the
thank you
paranormal purview.
I so decree it.
My number two, it's become totally cliche and I didn't want to put it on the list just because it's like, oh, Christmas, of course you're going to mention this. And I don't even think it's like the best Christmas movie, but the pure joy and spirit of Will Ferrell as Elf and his exchanges with the manager in the mall played by Faison Love, culminating in when he says Santa's coming and he just screams.
Why are you smiling like that?
I just like to smile. Smiling's my favorite.
Make work your favorite. That's your favorite, okay?
Okay.
Work is your new favorite.
Fine.
It's time for the announcement.
Okay.
Okay, people, tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., Santa's coming to town.
Santa! Oh, my God!
And their whole interchange and the hijinks of Elf in that moment when he screams Santa is like great Christmas fare.
Excellent.
It's holiday hijinks at its best.
Excellent. So my number two has got to be maybe my favorite Christmas moment ever. And it's Mrs. Deagle flying out of the top story of her house in Gremlins.
That's definitely holiday hijinks.
I mean, I think it's the best Christmas movie ever made, first of all. But second of all, that's the moment in the movie where you go, oh, this movie's got fangs. Like is mean-spirited.
Yeah.
And that was great. They just kill her outright. You just know she's dead. Like it's straight. You can't survive that accident. You can't. She goes sideways too at the end and just like, oh, impact is rough. She's gone.
You'd have been proud of me because I fired up. Two people were doing that ubiquitous argument we do every year is Die Hard a Christmas movie that people do online.
Sure. Like, yeah.
And I just watched them go back and forth and they said, what do you think? I said, not only is it, in my estimation, not a Christmas movie, Lethal Weapon is more of a Christmas movie than Die Hard is, and it's a better movie too. And they're like,
well, okay, this is a whole other show, whole other discussion. You've mentioned two Christmas. Big, you know, I mean, look, I find it absurd. I had this conversation with my buddy Peter, who's been on the show, Peter Stray.
Yeah,
he's a Die Hard nut, as you know.
Peter's awesome.
I like Die Hard a lot. I'm a Lethal Weapon fan. I think that's those two movies were synonymous because they came out similar times and you were kind of either at the time more Team Lethal Weapon or Team Die Hard. And I just, I'm a buddy cop guy. So that's hard for me to say no to. And also they're incomparable. Die Hard is a clockwork, beautiful script, very ornate, complicated structure, all of that. And Lethal Weapon's just a hangout movie. You can't, it's like a Robert Altman movie compared. So, you know, they're not the same thing, but it's a better Christmas movie.
Yeah, I think it's a better Christmas movie. I think it's a better movie. I think there's nothing in Die Hard that's as close to like three scenes I can think of in Lethal Weapon. Like when Danny Glover and him have the screaming match inside the abandoned building when he asks him to kill himself, like, go ahead and do it like that. There's nothing in Die Hard with that much pathos, that well acted. I mean, it, to me, it's like Die Hard's like Pepsi and Lethal Weapon's like Coke, you know, it's like, if you drink Pepsi, it's fine. It's sweet and sugary, but you're wrong. Coke's the greatest drink ever made.
It's totally, you can't compare that. I disagree. I think one is like one's root beer. One's like the best root beer and the other is the best Coke. Fine. They're very different. I can't compare them.
Yeah.
I think you compare Predator with Die Hard more. Those are the same directors, but they're actually more similar to me, even though it was a team movie. Lethal Weapon's a hangout movie. Lethal Weapon, you can drop in anytime, hang out with these guys. You like the banter.
It's got so much heart. Like the reason it's more of a Christmas movie is that just that final scene, even like when he invites him in the house for Christmas, like, and the family relationship and there's like actual character development. Die Hard's fun, But like, you're never like, oh God, he's back with his wife. Thank God, I'm getting choked up. I'm not even close to that. Not even close.
Die Hard doesn't start with a naked runaway girl doing coke in a Santa hat.
Thank you. Thank you.
So there you go.
Now I am in a good mood. All right. Now, number one. Who's done one? Have you done one? Have I done one? I got to go first.
We both did three. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Here we go. Drum roll. My number one holiday hijinks. I'm a sucker for it. I always will be. It's Clarence at the bar in It's a Wonderful Life ordering a drink when he's been dead for 150 years. And what's amazing about the scene is not only the comedy that kind of ratchets up so well as this bartender's getting more and more suspicious of them and angry with them and kicks them out. And the way he's just innocently going like, oh, I know, a mulled wine, heavy on the cinnamon, light on the clover. Be lively, my boy. It's just hilarious. But I was thinking about it when I was making this list. The last time we're in that bar, George Bailey has that incredible breakdown as played by the incredible Jimmy Stewart, who was actually going through PTSD at the time. And you watch this man weep at the bar and they all comfort him and take care of him. And then the next time we're in there, you get this other world. And it's like this kind of screwball comedy moment. And I just think the juxtaposition of that is so beautiful. And that's my number one holiday hijinks, Clarence at the bar ordering a drink.
Beautiful choice. Beautiful choice. And in keeping with that lovely Christmas time theme, my number one has got to be just a moment that takes place at the best Christmas party that's ever been in a film. It's Eyes Wide Shut. And it's when the man in red tells Tom Cruise to take off his clothes. The most alarming Christmas moment.
You know, I totally forgot that was Christmas.
Yeah, it's a Christmas party.
Thank you.
Take off your clothes. And his response, gentlemen, please.
Wow.
Any honorable mentions?
Yeah. The one that I really fought over putting in my top three, in the movie Scrooged. There's so many great, funny Christmas hijinks in that movie. The one, and I think I've even mentioned on this podcast before, he's haunted by the ghost of Christmas present, I believe. The great Carol Kane plays one of the angels but she like abuses him. And there's one scene, he's like, she pokes him in the eye. It's like a whole Three Stooges thing. And then he just like looks away and she's coming the other way. And she like whacks him with a toaster. Because like, come with me, Frank. And she like whacks him in the face. Yeah, so that's a definite honorable mention. There's a lot of great holiday hijinks in that.
Honorable mention for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna get the real holiday spirit and go for just if you haven't seen Christmas Carol with Alistair Sim, like the 51 black and white version of that story, you're missing out. Mm. I think it's fantastic, and Alistair Sim being taken on the ride of all the horrible things that he's been responsible for on that nightmare end of it is really spooky and great. And his turnaround as Scrooge is the most believable, and it's great. It's a great Christmas movie.
I have seen that. I didn't recognize it by when you described it, but yeah, I've seen that, but I was a kid. I haven't seen that in so long. That's like the 1950s version.
51. Yeah. And great. Yeah. It's really good. Alistair Sim's a great actor. It's for a perfect Scrooge. And then I just want to give a little shout out in honor of my pop to Edward Scissorhands, which is never really references a Christmas movie, but it kind of is, you know, there's a lot of Christmas in it.
It's a blind spot. I've never seen Edward.
Never seen it.
No.
Oh, wow. It's a Christmas movie. It's a, you know, check it out over the holiday if you have the chance. It's a classic. It's one of Tim Burton's better movies. Right. It really is good.
All right. I'm going to watch. I'm not a Tim Burton, but I love your dad, so I'm going to probably love it. I'm not a big Tim Burton guy, but.
Okay. Ever? You didn't like Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Love that. That's an exception.
You didn't like
Pee-wee's Big Adventure is one of the best movies ever.
Beetlejuice?
Okay.
All right. I can understand not being into his whole film catalog, but take it easy on the first four or five films, man, because they're pretty great. It's one of the best movies ever made. 100
movies ever made. 100%.
I could watch the beginning of that movie every day of my life.
I fundamentally
start my day. I want to watch Pee-wee start his day every day of my life.
I needed to be in Pee-wee's Playhouse today. I got off this day was a bad day for me. Matter of fact, I might go watch it.
Merci, baby.
Yeah. My favorite line in the whole movie. I'm trying to make a phone call to the biker guys.
Yeah. And then they'll love him.
Yeah.
Of course. Do you mind?
Merry Christmas, man.
Merry Christmas. Do you see? I'm laughing till I cry now. I'm in a good mood.
There you go.
You
That's
did
what I'm
it.
Here for. That's what I'm here for, man.
We'll see you in 2024 with our year in review. Merry Christmas, everybody. And have a great little break. We'll be back very soon. We will look ahead to 2024 and we will look back at 2023.
Happy holidays, everybody. Happy New Year.
Remember, no man is a failure who has friends.
I am a successful man.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. On social media, we're at Rated Paranormal. All music is by Andrew Goldens Jr. You can find him on Instagram at Kid Riga or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
Taylor Swift.
All I even needed is something like this.
Let's get some good Maddie energy.